Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe introduces new measures to contain Omicron.
With immediate effect, all returning residents and visitors have to undergo PCR testing and will be quarantined at own cost.
Nigeria reports its first cases of the Omicron variant. The French military says its forces did not fire into a crowd of Niger protesters. A new academic study says Tanzania's 2020 election was not free and fair. We'll talk with an official of the opposition Chadema party. And today, Thursday, is the final day of campaigning in Saturday's Gambia presidential election.
The IEC gave each candidate a 7-day period to sell their agendas and their manifestos to the Gambian people. It's been quite interesting the past couple of days.
And teenage pregnancy spiked in South Africa during the pandemic. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe has announced a 9-hour curfew and compulsory 14-day quarantine for anyone arriving in the country to prevent the spread of the coronavirus Omicron variant. Zimbabwe is the first Southern African country to enact such restrictions since the emergence of the variant, which, according to experts, spreads more easily. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, the new measures come just in time for the holiday season, when many Zimbabweans living abroad hope to return home to visit family members.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa, in a televised address Tuesday night, said the government was closely monitoring what he called an ominous development following the discovery of the Omicron variant in neighboring South Africa.
Government has decided on new enhanced measures to strengthen our national response and to protect our nation from impact of a likely fourth wave, which the new variant, Omicron, will most certainly aggravate. With immediate effect, the following measures will now apply. All returning residents and visitors have to undergo PCR testing and will be quarantined at own cost for days recommended by WHO. Even if they present negative PCR test results from elsewhere.
Opposition MDC Alliance Vice President and IBT immediately criticized the new rule, saying on social media he had been left hopeless after a loony decision made by the government. Dr. Nomeni Matara, the head of the Zimbabwe Association for Doctors for Human Rights, says the government has been proactive in trying to keep the Omicron, initially named B11529, from crossing the borders.
But we are also worried by the restrictions that have been put in by the government, especially the decision to quarantine returning residents and citizens and also travelers who test negative for COVID-19 with two PCR results. We think that these restrictions are nothing more than punishment. They are just knee-jerk decisions which were made based on emotion rather than scientific evidence or common sense. They also destroy the tourism sector and the business in Zimbabwe.
Independent political commentator Kudzai Mutisi concurs that the measures are too harsh and will put more fatigue on the vaccination program in Zimbabwe.
You promote vaccination by incentivizing vaccination. So if somebody has been vaccinated, you try to reduce inconvenience to them. Then you put inconvenience on those who are not vaccinated. In that way, you try to push people to get vaccinated. Because we are no longer in the era of lockdowns. Lockdowns were there before we had vaccines. Lockdowns were there before we understood this virus. Now a lot is now known and we now have vaccines. So it's time to vaccinate, not to lock down.
Zimbabwe has fully inoculated just above 2.8 million people since February, when it began its vaccination program to contain the COVID-19 pandemic. The government wants to vaccinate at least 10 million Zimbabweans by the end of the year, a figure which some say might be difficult to reach given the scarcity of resources and short time left. President Emmerson Mnangagwa said he would review his new measures to contain the Omicron variant after 14 days. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Nigeria's Center for Disease Control on Wednesday confirmed the country's first cases of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus in two travelers from South Africa. But Canada on Sunday had already reported cases of the variant from Canadians who had recently returned from Nigeria. The infections raised concerns that the Omicron variant, which spreads more easily, could be taking hold in Nigeria, Africa's most populous country. Timothy Obiezu reports. From Abuja.
Nigeria's Center for Disease Control made the announcement in a statement early Wednesday and said three cases had been confirmed so far. However, officials corrected the report, which had earlier suggested that Nigeria had found evidence of Omicron since October, in follow-up statement released Wednesday afternoon. The earlier report raised concerns that the variant may have been circulating for weeks before it was detected and officially announced in South Africa last week. The variant has spread to at least 24 countries. Nigeria's CDC Director General Ifedayo Adetifa says authorities are already taking measures to prevent its spread in Nigeria.
We are enhancing surveillance in terms of looking at travelers, unlikely importation of cases, and ensuring that travelers adhere to all of the travel advisory. We continue to watch as this variant spreads through the population.
On Sunday, Canadian authorities said they detected the variant in two travelers who had recently been in Nigeria and expanded a travel ban to include Nigeria and nine other African countries. But Nigerian authorities had maintained that no case of the variant had been seen in the country. However, during a weekly COVID-19 update in Abuja Monday, Niger's health minister said the country was preparing for any eventualities.
We are adopting a watchful waiting posture. Watchful waiting posture in that we are looking very closely at all developments and watching the points of entry.
The World Health Organization has designated Omicron a variant of concern and urged leaders to take urgent control measures. But Adetifa says restricting travel is a step taken too soon.
We are currently the subject of travel bans ourselves for reasons that are not driven by the science. So this is not driven by the science, and this is, we think, from a technical perspective at the moment, that this is not the way to go.
Nigerian authorities say they will continue to maintain strong surveillance, hoping to limit the variant spread and apply stricter measures if need be. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Today, Thursday, is the final day of campaigning for Saturday's Gambia presidential election. Six candidates, including incumbent Adama Barrow, are vying for the top post. Gambians are basking in their newfound democracy, especially following the Yahya Jammeh era. But the shadow of the former president looms large over the campaign as he continues to call into the campaign of one of the candidates, leaving the Elections Commission to issue a warning. On the line from Banjul is journalist Sajo Brito of the Fatu Digital Media Network.
We can remember the IEC gave each candidate a 7-day period to sell their agendas and their manifestos to the Gambian people. It's been quite interesting the past couple of days. But also, you know, this is not very common in the country. As we all know, in the past regime, this has not always been the case for political candidates. They didn't have the chance to always go out there to sell their agendas to the Gambian people. So one might say, well, thanks to our newfound democracy. Just also note something that is very important is that not only do these candidates go out there to sell their agendas to the Gambian people, but they even have the opportunity, just like the president of this country, His Excellency Adama Barrow, to be on national TV to sell their agendas. In the past 22 years of Yahya Jammeh's presidency, that was not always the case. So it's been quite interesting in the past 7 days.
What about the issue of former President Yahya Jammeh in the campaign? I know that there was a warning in the Gambian papers from the Electoral Commission about the former president.
Yes, there has been a complaint from the IEC, or let's say a warning for the political leaders giving him the platform to stop. And not only that, there have been growing concerns also from the Gambian people, also civil society organizations have in fact called on the president of this country to tell him that this is not someone we need to give a platform to, because the rhetoric he's been throwing out there could be a danger and a threat to this country. So he has been condemned for some of the remarks he's been saying on these platforms. And even the president has said that Jammeh should not be given any platform to say the things that he is saying.
You know, listening to you, it sounds to me that the people of Gambia are happy about this newfound democracy, the fact that their politicians are able to campaign, unlike the era of Yahya Jammeh. So is it fair to say that people think that this election is going to be free and fair?
It depends, because for the past couple of days, if you follow Gambian social media, it is in fact quite the opposite of people thinking that this election is going to be free and fair. I think when we talk about, you know, the democratic part, the only thing that comes to mind is that, well, now we can stand out there and openly share our opinions, and now our political leaders can be out there and say whatever they want to the Gambian people or sell their agendas to the Gambian people. But when it comes to these elections, it is surprising to know that it is quite the opposite. There have been growing concerns about the IEC. You know, political candidates from all sides have been accusing the Independent Electoral Commission allegations that this election might in fact be rigged. As a matter of fact, just a couple of hours ago, there is a report that there is this advocacy group that applied for a permit to protest against the Independent Electoral Commission, which in fact was rejected by the Inspector General of Police. So it is quite the opposite. Gambians are very confident with the Independent Electoral Commission.
Are there any international observers to this election?
Oh, yes, James. There are, in fact, so many observers at this time in the country, both from the local level. We also have regional observers like the African Union Observer Mission, and we also have observers from the European Union and other international observer missions, too.
Sajo, thank you so much for talking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much, James.
That was journalist Sajo Brito in the Gambian capital, Banjul. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 2nd. A new report by Dar es Salaam University Political Science Department says Tanzania's 2020 presidential and parliamentary election was not free and fair. The report by the Research and Education for Democracy in Tanzania, also known as REDET, says the 2020 election lacked a level playing field, which impacted the opposition. It says, unlike previous elections, the opposition lacked financial resources to fairly compete. The report criticized the Elections Commission for rapidly disqualifying candidates for minor mistakes. John Nrema is the Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs, and Protocols for Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He says, while the report offers several lessons to learn about Tanzania's electoral process, he wonders why it took REDET a whole year before releasing its report.
First, I can say that I've read that article from the Citizen, and partially I can agree with the Reddit chairman, Professor Rekaza Mkandala, on some key issues that the 2020 general election was neither free nor fair. Although, if you can ask them why then they did it took almost a year to produce that report, I think they have another story. And that's where we can part. First of all, within it, they have narrated some of the issues. For instance, on the issue of posters, that the opposition candidates failed to put up their posters. The REDET, they were supposed to go further. That 2015 general election, it is true that we need to put posters, billboards across the country. But this time, It was not possible because in 2017, the government decided to change the local government laws, and all the issues concerning posters and billboards were now under the central government. And if you need to put any poster, you have to pay for the tax revenue of the country, something which was very expensive. And because it was controlled then by the central government, the only posters and billboards which were allowed across the country was for the late Magufuli.
The Reddit raised the issue of candidates being disqualified due to what they call shortcomings in the way they filled in their election forms. I followed the Tanzania election. There was always a dispute about some opposition candidates being disqualified. What do you make of this particular note that the Reddit makes about disqualification?
Yes, I can tell you that for the matter of local council election, candidates were disqualified without legal reasons. For the matter of members of parliament, for the case of our party, we did file the candidates in all 264 constituencies across the country, in mainland and Zanzibar. But in day one, 28 of them were disqualified without any reason.
Even though you questioned Reddit for releasing this report late, is there some lessons to draw from their observations?
Yes, so we have several lessons to learn from their observation, and I do respect Reddit because I'm also a student of political science from the same university, from the same faculty. So I respect what Reddit is been doing. So we have a lot of lessons to learn from their report concerning our electoral system, concerning how we do conduct our elections in the country, concerning how to get resources for the candidates of the minority parties. And also we have to learn how the government is using the government machinery to facilitate election for the incumbent, using the state machinery, state resources for the benefit of the incumbent. That's why we are demanding to have a free, independent electoral commission. And also we are demanding for the new constitution of the country so that we can combine all the matters and put them under one roof. So next time we want see these kind of things in the election in our country.
John Redman is Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols for Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He was speaking with us from Dar es Salaam. A French military spokesperson has denied an accusation that French soldiers shot into a crowd of protesters in Niger late last month. The deteriorating security situation in Africa's Sahel region has been accompanied by increasing protests against the French forces sent to help African governments battle Islamist militant groups who are increasingly active in the region. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
Demonstrations against the French are driven by misinformation spread online that French forces are arming groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, the same groups the French were deployed to fight in the Sahel nearly a decade ago. On Friday, November 26th, a French military convoy, which was stranded in Burkina Faso for more than a week as protesters blocked its progress, passed into Niger. The next day, as had happened in Burkina Faso, Nigerian protesters blocked the convoy, demanding to know what was being transported. Nigerian authorities say two protesters were killed and 16 injured on Saturday, while eyewitnesses told the French TV station TV5 Monde that they saw French soldiers firing into the crowd. In an interview with VOA, Colonel Pascal Iani, the spokesman for the French Army Chief of Staff, was asked if the French troops had fired on protesters.
Je répète ce que je viens de dire, les forces françaises n'ont pas tiré sur la foule.
He said, I repeat what I just said. The French forces did not shoot at the crowd, he said. French forces fired above the crowd and fired in front of the crowd, at the feet of the crowd, to stop the most violent demonstrators. Iani said that the French troops and Nigerian military police needed to take action against the protesters, armed with stones and batons, to prevent the convoy being burned and looted. Regarding the deaths and injuries reported by the Nigerian authorities, he said,
Je ne peux pas confirmer,
I cannot confirm or affirm these results, which were announced by the Nigerian authorities. Asked if there would be an investigation, since it was unclear what had happened, The colonel said that would be up to the authorities in Niger.
Je pense qu'ils vont, ils vont recueillir des témoignages.
He said, I think they will collect testimonies. They will recover all the videotapes or photos that were taken on this occasion, and they will try to determine exactly who is responsible. Philippe M. Fraud is an associate professor at Ottawa University and an expert on the Sahel. He says anti-French sentiment has been growing in the Sahel for years.
So many of these fault lines and much of this kind of sentiment, very sort of generic sort of anti-French sentiment, has found a much clearer expression when it comes to kind of, you know, blocking this convoy.
Fraud also points out the Nigerian president said last month that French military support is essential to state security.
The French presence is indispensable, right? That if the French were to leave their base in Gao in Mali, that there would be chaos. And so I think that this reflects some sense of the calculus of how Sahel states are looking at French intervention as something that's actually primordial in terms of assuring the security of the state.
Asked if the next French military supply convoy headed for Niger and Mali via Burkina Faso would take a different route, Colonel Iani said officials were studying different options. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou.
South Africa's teenage pregnancy rate has jumped 60% amid the COVID-19 pandemic, an increase that is affecting the education of many young women and their hopes to escape the cycle of poverty. Even though South Africa has introduced sex education in schools, parents have resisted. Franco Puglisi reports from Johannesburg.
When schoolgirls in South Africa become pregnant, only one-third return to class. It's a major factor contributing to socio-economic disadvantage among youth. Serena, who does not want her real name to be used, was 15 years old when she gave birth to a daughter.
I didn't know what to do. I was confused, I was scared, I was devastated. Sometimes I can't balance my life, my education and the baby. But due to the support of my parents, I can do that.
Serena's experience as a teen mother was made more difficult by her parents' initial rejection and being ostracized by the local community.
I was very upset and too emotional. But all in all, Serena, this is not the end of the world. The main purpose is that you must supposed to go to school, attend school regularly, respect your teachers as you respect your parents at home.
The education system should put a priority on sex education, says Eddie Kekana, a primary school principal in Johannesburg.
My school is situated in an informal settlement where there are serious socio-economic factors leading to the high rate of teenage pregnancy. COVID-19 also exacerbated the situation. We should actually start collaborating and then take responsibility, educating our young people about this particular kind of a problem.
Implementation of sex education programs was abandoned in the face of resistance by many parents, says Mugwena Maluleke, the head of a South African teachers' union.
When it was supposed to be introduced as sexuality education, the community started making a lot of arguments against and arguments for, so it had to be stopped, and therefore the training did not take place. The communities were not happy with that, and we are seeing the consequences of not having sexuality education is the high rate of teenage pregnancy.
While communities and parents opposed introducing sex education in schools, some parents, like Serena's mother, supported the programs.
It depends on what kind of parents we are, but naturally, I must be free with my daughters to speak about sex. They must know all things about sex. Even at school, no problem. We don't have any problem about that.
The controversy continues, but has gained new urgency with the latest increase in teen pregnancy. Franco Pugliese for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that's it for this Thursday, December 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30.